Hello everyone, Matt here. Just another pre-show note to say that a bit of this chat at the beginning focuses on Andy currently taking some time out of goalkeeper coaching and preparing for next steps, whatever they may have been. And such is the excellent timing of the Goalkeepers Union podcast. That was about 2 weeks prior to the news that he's now stepped into his role at Huddersfield, as was announced by the club just yesterday. So as things stand, he shall remain with Huddersfield, working with their entire goalkeeping department until the end of the season. So yeah, a quick update on that. But of course, hopefully, still an enjoyable listen all the same.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with this week's guest who goes hand in hand with goalkeeping. After more than a decade serving at Stoke, he stretched his coaching wings with the Bees of Brentford and the Brewers of Burton before floating across the pond to front up a new franchise in MLS, and in return transitioned from goalkeeper coach to assistant coach. Now back in Blighty as he awaits his next adventure. Andy Quay, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Delighted to have you here. I've got a question before we get to the quickfire questions, which I haven't told you about, so I do apologise for that. But my first question is Quay.
Yes.
That's not a name I've heard before and anywhere else, in fact. Oh,
I'm surprised you've not heard it before, but there's a place actually in Cambridge called Stoke Come Quay, and there is a Quay Hotel. No relations, but that's where it's all traced back to. So yeah, just outside of Cambridge, a little place called Stoke Come Quay.
Okay. So it's English.
It is English, yep.
Okay. Interesting. And it definitely is Quay.
Quay, yes. Okay. Yeah.
Because when I first saw this many moons ago, I was like, Key, Quay, Quay.
Yeah. I'll answer to any of them.
Okay. Quick fire questions for you. What gloves did you wear?
As a player.
As a player and a coach.
Royce, Sells, Allsport. And as a coach, Nike most of the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Favourite kit that either you have worn or perhaps you've seen another goalkeeper wear?
It would be, my favourite kit would have been an old Tottenham kit, a team I've always supported. One of the really old Hummel kits, to be honest with you.
Lovely. Like the light blue
type? Yeah. Light blue. Yeah. Eric Torsvet.
Lovely.
That era. Ian Walker.
Saves galore.
Yeah.
That save from Eric Torsvet on saves galore.
Right.
Yeah. Most memorable save that you ever made?
That I ever made? There's not many very high profile ones of those, but I think there was one in Tottenham's reserves against Queen's Park Rangers, which was probably one of my best saves. But yeah, it wasn't a real highlight, I have to say.
Describe, please.
Cross ball, moving across goal, header from 6 yards out, threw myself and tipped it over the crossbar. But yeah, it was dynamic, explosive, enjoyable, one that stuck in my mind.
All the keywords.
Yeah.
Like that. Goalkeeping icon?
Was Pat Jennings. I had the pleasure of working with him at Tottenham. He was my goalkeeping coach for a long while I was a YT there, and an absolutely top man. So he was somebody I'd idolised as a kid. I was lucky enough to meet him, work with him, and have the pleasure of knowing him. So.
True what they say about the hands?
Massive.
Yeah.
Big hands, soft voice, absolute gentleman.
Yeah, a lovely man. Honoured with the statue, wasn't he, recently?
Yes.
And finally, the best goalkeeper you've either played with or worked with or against?
Oh, that's putting me under big pressure. I mean, I've worked with some really good goalkeepers, and I think I put it as like choosing between your kids, to be quite honest with you, in terms of the goalkeepers that we work with. I mean, from when I started at Stoke, Thomas Sorensen, Asmir Begovic, Jack Butland were fantastic. I mean, I had Shay Given, Adam Federici within that as well. So some real top goalkeepers that have had fantastic careers that I've worked with. So yeah, I couldn't choose between them, I have to say.
A very good answer you've given there. Very well done. Media trained, Andy.
Yes. I don't know about that.
So we are where we are, by the way. Thank you for allowing me into your humble abode.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
It's a lovely spot.
Thank you.
Some lovely surroundings that we have here. But we'll start with the fact that you are in a period at the moment, out of the game. Not the first time, I guess, you've done this, but back in Blighty.
Yep. You know, as most coaches and managers and people working in football find themselves out of work from time to time. And yeah, having some time to spend with the family. Get out and watch a lot of games and watch goalkeepers, watch teams. And been lucky enough to go into a couple of clubs and see people, different people work. So it's been good.
It must be nice to step back sometimes when you've been involved in just the toing and froing of goalkeeper coaching for as long as you have, to actually step out of it for a period and, yeah, reflect and also maybe even educate yourself a little bit more.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think when you're in the game day to day, you're working towards a goal, whichever club that may be, you know, different goals, different ideas of what the season looks like, what it might look like for different players within your group. You immerse yourself in that and you know, once you come out of that, sometimes your eyes open and you see things possibly a little bit clearer, or you have time to reflect, and it gives you an opportunity to talk to people that are in different environments, realize that, you know, sometimes the environment you were in wasn't so bad after all, or, you know, certain things that were happening around you, they happen everywhere, you know. At every club, and I was having this conversation yesterday, every club is having the same struggles and the same issues, and you're sort of trying to fight the same fights whichever club you're in. And I've learned that from being in different clubs, and then again, even talking to other people that are working at the moment, they say, oh, they're having an issue with this or a problem with that, and it could be a facility or a pre-season or a player or whatever it may be, an issue within the way that they're playing or a period within the season. And that's the excitement of it all. So sometimes it's just nice to sit back and reflect and think, yeah, it's you know, but what I've been doing, what we're all doing and what we're all trying to work towards is actually we're doing the right things, and we can learn, and I can learn from other people and how they're going about their business and the things that they're putting into action. So, yeah, it's a good period.
It happens across the board that as well, doesn't it? The fact that you can see another club, see another coach and think, they've got it all right over there. Yeah. But sometimes, like you've just said, the grass isn't always greener. Yes, they are having a good time, but they've got their own struggles, their own problems, just like you have at your club.
Yeah, and I think that's the same. You know, there's varying levels, whether in, you know, the Premier League, you're in League Two, you're in the MLS, you know, wherever you are, the actual clubs have similar problems throughout. And it's, you know, as a coach, you have to keep your focus on, you know, developing players, winning games, and that's really your focus. So, you know, there's a lot of things that happen, or noise around the club and around different things that are happening, but you have to remind yourself that your focus is, you know, developing players and winning games ultimately, and that's my feel about it anyway.
You said that you've been in and around various clubs at the moment. You certainly are a man who has a good network, good contacts in goalkeeping, because you've been ensconced in the position and the coaching game for quite a while now. I said at the top there, you go hand in hand with goalkeeping. I think there are a select group of coaches that are just synonymous with the position. You are one of those.
It's nice of you to say so. I mean, I feel like I've had a good journey from like I said earlier, as a whitey at Tottenham, a young pro at Derby. Didn't fulfil my dream as a player, that's for sure. You know, I was a pro, which might be many people's dream, but not to play many games or play at the highest level. So the next thing for me was coaching. I started with, you know, coaching football in the community at Derby, Derby's Academy, Aston Villa's Academy, sort of part-time at Lincoln with their first team, and then was fortunate to get a part-time opportunity at Stoke when they were in the Championship, and we got promoted to the Premier League, and things have sort of, you know, developed and continued from there. So it's been a fantastic journey, wouldn't change any of it, and hopefully it can continue for a little while longer.
And you got in early, right? Because what we're seeing now with a number of goalkeeper coaches, and we mention it so many times on this podcast, is those who wanted to play the game, didn't quite make it, but started their badges, started their time on the grass in their early 20s. Mm-hmm. That's what you've done, and it certainly bore fruit. It seems like a lot of goalkeeper coaches are tending to do that now.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I stopped playing, I moved to Derby, and Eric Steele was the goalkeeping coach at the time, and he was working at maybe three or four clubs at the time. I think he was doing Derby, Barnsley, Grimsby, Notts County, and one of the first people to be doing that, I think there was probably maybe five or six coaches similar to Eric working in that way. And he's always, you know, been my mentor, worked very closely with him. You know, sort of he led me down a path of, you know, getting those qualifications, gave me an avenue that I could proceed down. And a path started to open up at that time where academies were looking for goalkeeping coaches, whether they be part-time or full-time. Luckily enough, at Derby, there was a lot of support there with the academy at the time. So I went in there, and yeah, it was called a part-time role, but it was pretty much full-time as things become in football. And then moved on to Aston Villa. And again, like I say, things progressed from there. But yeah, it was there was a clear pathway in terms of, you know, getting badges, educating yourself, and learning the position, and the positions just continue to evolve and will do so from that point.
That it's interesting what you said there about the part-time role at Derby. I would imagine that was a part-time role, very much on part-time wages, but mm-hmm. A, because of the love of goalkeeping, and B, because of your desire to progress, it becomes full-time, sorry, that's put on you, but there's almost a willingness to do that, even on the part-time wages, because yeah, you want to get to where you need to be.
Yeah, I mean, when I finished at that time, I'd stopped playing. I was sort of starting to do my badges. I was doing the academy at Derby. I was doing bits for the football in the community and working as a personal trainer in a gym as well. So they were sort of the lines that I'd set myself up to be able to cope financially, look after myself, and hopefully, you see, you know, manoeuvre myself down this path. And the personal training side was a big part of that as well.
You were actually a qualified personal trainer.
I was a qualified personal trainer.
And,
and I used to take spin classes as well. So that was...
Did you?
Which came in handy at Stoke a couple of times. On a Monday morning, I'd do a few recovery sessions with the boys. But it was something that I'd always had a big interest in. Again, it was a way for me to earn some money, but also linking it in with the goalkeeping as well. And that's always stood me in good stead as I've developed my role as a goalkeeping coach, especially in the early days where there weren't as many staff as there are now. The strength conditioning sports science side wasn't as big as it is now. So that really helped me early on.
So is there an overlap now? So when you go into a club, do you utilise that qualification in any way, or do you just leave it to the guys?
No, I mean, there'll be conversations that I'll have with the guys. I mean, my qualifications are well out of date, and these guys have got degrees and things like that in the subjects now, and are way more qualified than I am. But because I do have an inkling of an idea of what I want and how I see things, and I'm able to have those discussions and, you know, have a good input into what I get and the buy-in that I want from the goalkeepers as well.
To go back to Stoke, so you mentioned that you went there initially in a part-time capacity, yeah. You said. Yeah. So Tony Pulis would have been the manager at the time. Now, I don't know Tony Pulis. You obviously know him very well.
Yeah.
I found it quite interesting. It doesn't strike me that, because I guess that's quite a progressive move. Not that he's not a progressive manager, but I would imagine that Tony Pulis would bring people in who were seasoned, you know, skin in the game, know exactly what they're doing. I'm not saying that you didn't know what you're doing, but you would have been, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed at the time, yeah. New to the game, new to that level of football. But he's, you know, I'm not saying taking a gamble, but he's decided to bring you in.
Yeah, no, it probably was a gamble from his point of view, but I was sort of bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, as you might put it, eager to do the job. Tony he'd done his due diligence. He'd asked around. He'd spoken to, you know, I kind of knew his assistant, Dave Kemp. I know he'd asked a lot of other people in the game that I'd previously worked with about me, and was probably, you know, Tony's a fantastic man manager. And so I was probably somebody he felt he could manage at the time, which he probably did for a little while. So yeah, it was probably a gamble for both of us. But you know, ultimately in the long run, it paid off, and had five very successful years with Tony.
And those five then led to another seven. So you did more than a decade mm-hmm. at Stoke. So, you know, we're talking 12 and a half years at one club, which nowadays is rare. You're not really going to see that too often. So to be at one club for that stretch of time, you've gone through various managerial changes. You've seen a number of goalkeepers come in and out of the club. It was, an interesting time.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. I mean, to look back on that time now, we had... the first 10 years were actually very stable because we had a year in the Championship, I think 4 or 5 years with Tony in the Premier League, which were fantastic. Europa League, Cup final against Man City, and then 4.5 years under Mark Hughes. So that first 10-year period were very, very stable, working with two managers. Unfortunately, we got to a point where there was a change made under Mark Hughes halfway through this, what turned out to be our last season in the Premier League. Paul Lambert came in. We were in a tough situation, and unfortunately, we were relegated that year, which then saw, I think, three or four more managers for me in that period. So Gary Rowett, Nathan Jones, Michael O'Neill. Before I eventually ended up leaving the club. So, you know, there was a real stable 10-year period, and then 3 years which were a little bit unstable managerially. But within that, I felt that there was a real good base in terms of a goalkeeping department. Was really lucky to work with some top goalkeepers, like I mentioned. Steve Simonson was there when I first went in the Championship. Carlo Nash came in and saw us through the last 10, 11 games of the Championship season to get us promoted. We signed Thomas Sorensen on a free from Aston Villa to start the Premier League season. And then really the journey and the development program for me began in terms of being able to have a real say in the goalkeepers that we brought in, being able to identify talent, being able to develop that talent or try to develop that talent. And we then brought in Asmir Begovic, we brought in Jack Butland, you know, we brought in a couple of other younger goalkeepers, Dan Backman now, we brought in from Australia who's playing in, or has been playing at Watford and done really well over the last 3 or 4 seasons. So, you know, we've had a, you know, there was a nice talent pool, and it was a real stable environment to bring people in. Also within that, the academy built and was able to work with some really good young coaches that are working in the game at the moment. Danny Alcock recently has been working at Nottingham Forest in the Premier League. Alessandro Baccarini, who's at Sunderland and was at Leeds. Matt Doyle, who went off to Arsenal's academy set up and now with the FA. So, yeah, a real good environment for goalkeeping, I have to say.
It must be really rewarding that, because you've gone in, you've cut your teeth, and then you've really progressed. And that's the key thing, right? It's about developing, it's about improving all the time. But to then be heavily involved in recruitment and match planning and everything else, you were involved in that side of it.
Yeah, I mean, everything about the game, you know, and to be able to, you know, you plan each day, each week, you prepare for each game, you live the highs and lows of those games, and then to have that longer term plan in terms of what your pathway is for your goalkeepers, you know, where you see the goalkeepers within your system moving on to, and where you can see gaps that you need to fill and, you know, go out and recruit new goalkeepers for those positions. So, yeah, you know, in terms of the short term and the long term planning, it's really good. And it's, when you look back on it, it's and when you talk about it like we are now, and you sort of go through some names and you think about the things that maybe you have achieved, it's something to be quite proud of.
And that's quite key for you too, right? It's not just going into a club and being the first team goalkeeper coach. It's very much heading up that goalkeeping department. And like you said, the pathway, forging that pathway from, you know, under eights, under nines, all the way through to the first team.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's the project for me, you know, and that's the type of job I like. I love winning every week, don't get me wrong. And that's part of it. But also to have any longevity, you know, this is a career we're talking about. If you want to be a coach, you need to build a career. So to be able to add all the facets to your armory, you know, to work in recruitment, to travel and see different players in different countries, to be able to put your neck on the line and say, let's take this one, let's not take this one. And again, to build that pathway for the players that you have, and, you know, to build a production line for the club, because ultimately, you are working for the club, they pay your wages, and you need to leave the club, you know, in the best possible circumstances you can when eventually that time does come that, that you have to leave for whatever reason.
There are players, goalkeepers, that will come through that I imagine from a certain age you recognise as not being cut out for the first team at that particular club that you are at. They might be a professional goalkeeper, but just not where you are working. What's the stage then for you? Because are you thinking, right, we need to forge a pathway to ensure that they then move on? And then how does that dynamic work when there is a goalkeeper that you know isn't going to be part of the plans moving forward, but you know that you also have to kind of do them right?
Yeah, I mean, I've always seen it that my job as a coach, I've got a responsibility to the club first and foremost to produce the best players for the club. You then have a responsibility to the players. And when where the players come around, the responsibility to them is to put them in the best position that they can perform, you know, to their optimal abilities to get the best out of their what they can for their career. And that might not be at the club that you're working at currently. The club may be progressing at a quicker rate than the player. They may just find themselves at an awkward age. You may have to bring a higher quality number one in, which then pops everybody down the pecking order. So, you know, for me, it's making sure that those goalkeepers are continually developing, continually motivated, and then to find opportunities for them, whether that be a loan or a permanent move, to continue in their career and their craft and continue for them to make a living in the game.
And keeping things fresh, I think, is key, especially when we apply your time at Stoke, because you're there for, like we said, more than a decade. Mm-hmm. You know, summer after summer, pre-season after pre-season, mid-season after mid-season. How are you keeping things fresh? You said it was quite a stable department, so I guess it's not as complex as perhaps it could have been. But yeah, what are you doing to make sure that those goalkeepers are kept on their toes at all times?
I think you're always making sure there's an element of competition. You're always making sure that everybody feels like they've got an opportunity. They're always working towards something. So, you know, IDPs come into it in terms of, and it depends, you know, whether number one, number two, number three, number four. But, you know, if they're not playing every week, they have to have something to work to. There's got to be some part of their game that they can work on, they can improve on, and they can be motivated to improve those elements of their game. Or they're seeing that I've got a loan coming up, or as we were at Stoke at times, a young international is working towards going away on an under 19 or an under 21 international duty. So they can see those opportunities and they have to be motivated and ready to go and play and work in those environments. You know, there's always, because of, a changeover of players, you're not going to keep the same four goalkeepers year on year on year. There's going to be a little change in that. So that will always keep things a little bit fresh in terms of competition for places and that individual competition element. And then, you know, for me personally, I have to keep things fresh and, you know, I can't churn out the same drills every week. You know, you have a philosophy, a way that you think is the right way to coach and teach and the way to get your point across. But, you know, we were talking about it earlier about going out and seeing other people work and picking up little ideas and how can I add that into my philosophy? How can I adapt a session? How can I add a piece of equipment or a movement or, you know, a starting position or something like that? How can that change what I'm doing and keep the sessions fresh? And also within that, I used to, you know, try and bring the academy goalkeeping coaches up as well to help, to learn, to take certain sessions. It might be an international break. That, you know, I'd stand back and watch them work for a week with the first team goalkeepers that were still available and, you know, try and keep everybody within that department motivated, whether it be coaches or players.
Philosophy and how you coach and how you teach, which you mentioned there. Now, we could probably sit back and talk until the end, until midnight on this. It's just an hour-long podcast or so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I can get you to maybe give it to us in a nutshell, your goalkeeping philosophy.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, start position, body shape, and then you're looking at sort of, you know, the techniques that you might use and the execution of those techniques. But, you know, my first point would be your start position in the goal, whether you're defending the goal, whether you're defending the space, defending crosses. What does the body shape look like? Your decision making in terms of, you know, what technique you're going to use, and then the execution of using those techniques. In terms of me working in the goal, that would be my main thing. I'm not completely fixed in terms of this has to be the way. Everybody has a different body shape, a different athletic ability. So, you know, certain things will change for the individuals. And I think, you know, that's the key for me, is finding out what, you know, having this, having a philosophy, a way of coaching, way of teaching, but being able to adapt to the individuals as well, and seeing the intricacies that each individual goalkeeper has, what might help one might not help another, and giving them the confidence to use their abilities and use what athletic ability, what mental ability they've got as well, because that comes into it. You know, we all know that, you know, any sport, the higher up the level you go, it becomes a mental game, and the belief that you have in what you're doing and how you're going to go about it is the biggest thing for me.
Starting position, that's interesting, because we were at a game together last week, and I think that was the first thing that you mentioned when discussing a certain goalkeeper at the game that we were at. You commented on his starting position.
Yeah, you know, I looked at his depth in the goal when he was looking to deal with shots, and again, his body shape as well. So in terms of shot stopping, but that also comes into dealing with crosses, you know, defending the space as well. So, yeah, I mean, that's really, really important. I mean, you know, as most people know within goalkeeping, that if your start position's right, you can either dictate play by coming and collecting the ball or making that save, or by putting enough pressure on the opponent that they don't even think about putting the ball into an area because they see you stood there. So for me, it's how you use those starting positions to your advantage in what, you know, whatever situation that may be.
And how you coach and how you teach can be a really varied topic, and one I really like discussing too, because you said there that you'll have individuals who want to be taught and coached a certain way. For me, that would be the really exciting thing about goalkeeper coaching, because it's not always the same. So you might get a character who's completely different. So then you have to step back and go, okay, right, I now have to be completely different to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, you have your way, but you then have to adapt your way to fit each goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be able to get your message across, and that's what teaching and coaching is about. You know, it's about how you get your message across, and it can't be the same way for everybody. You know, everybody has their own individual personalities. You know, there'll be people that you'll maybe clash with, or you find it difficult to bond with in certain ways. But, you know, again, that is part of the challenge. How do you get the best out of that individual? And usually, as a goalkeeping coach, you're working with 3, 4, 5 individuals at any one time. They're your focus, and there's going to be 3, 4, 5 different personalities. And it's how you affect those people in the right way, how they buy into what you're doing, how they learn from you, and how you give them confidence to go out on the pitch and perform to the highest level.
And that ultimate goalkeeping department then, because you've worked at the top level with, you know, top goalkeepers at top clubs, you've also worked in the Championship, in League One with Burton 2, MLS, which we'll get onto in a moment. So I'm presuming that the goalkeeping department, because of resources and players available, does differ from one to the other.
Oh, certainly, yeah. I mean, it can vary from, maybe, you know, 2 goalkeeping coaches and myself and somebody working alongside me with an analyst and, you know, a strength conditioning coach, to me doing everything. You know, the analyst, the goalkeeping coach, the strength conditioning. So, yeah, I mean, there's a wide variety of hats that you might have to put on. Yeah, I mean, again, that comes down to you as an individual, what you feel your strengths and weaknesses are as a coach, and the resources that you have at hand.
Do you enjoy putting on all the different hats? Do you enjoy doing everything? Because I guess, again, there is the argument to suggest, and it's not as straightforward as this, but the higher you get, the not the easier your job becomes, but perhaps the less jumbled it becomes because you have to do so much more at a lower level?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's certain things that you'll find you're good at and you're not so good at, and it's getting the right people around you. And I think, you know, and I certainly look at some departments now, you know, around the league or the Premier League, and there's a lot of people involved and a lot of voices. And I think, I'm not saying that there can be mixed messages, but, you know, we're talking about how a player can buy into you as a coach, as a goalkeeping coach. What effects are you going to have on that player? And the challenge of you communicating and getting the best out of them. And, you know, maybe, you know, an argument is if there's two or three goalkeeping coaches, plus your sports science, plus your analysis, there's a lot of voices that can go into those, and maybe it can be very good, but also there can be a downside to it as well. So, you know, I think there's a real balance between the number of people that you do have involved in the department and you making your life easier, for want of a better word, and how you can really immerse yourself and give everything yourself to your craft and what you're doing.
Would that affect your decision when looking to go into a new club now as to how the whole department is structured?
It wouldn't affect my decision, but I would look at it and I'd think, okay, well, who's here? How can I use them to the best of my abilities, and which people do I have to manage as a coach? You know, I have to manage. So, you know, like I said earlier, I have a background in strength conditioning, but I don't have a degree. I'm not an expert like the guys that are in there now, but I have to have a handle on it. I have to know what's going on with my player when he walks in the gym. So my background helps me, and it helps me have discussions, and it helps me manage relationships with the performance department. You know, an analyst, I'm not a computer whiz kid. I really am not. So I can get by, but can the analyst help me a little bit? You know, so, you know, how can I get a little bit of help from them? What do I need? So, yeah, I mean, it's just about going in and seeing what the bits are that you have to really put all of your efforts into, and then where you can get help from other parts of the club, the resources that are there.
And in the time that you've been in the game, you've been at clubs where, you know, the one and two, when I think of your time at Stoke in particular, are always really, really challenging each other. You've got almost, not two number ones, but, you know, the two is really challenging that number one.
Yeah.
Is it for you very straightforward that you've got the one, two, three and four? How does that department shape up for you?
Well, there's always a level of competition within that. And somebody who may feel that he's not in the squad or travelling each week has to feel like he can see a way forward, has to feel like he can, one day he could be the number one, you know? So there has to be that level of competition all the time. The way that I've always worked, there's always been competition but coming from different levels, you know, from a young goalkeeper competing with an older goalkeeper, or a young goalkeeper that's starting and playing, and you bring in a more experienced goalkeeper in that's putting pressure on him, and then he might end up playing the older goalkeeper. But how do they fight it out? You know, I think to have two goalkeepers of the same age, of the same level, playing or competing can be very difficult, you know, especially at the highest level. I do see that.
Have you ever had an issue in your time in the game where you've encountered a problem in that area that you've needed to rectify?
No. Every goalkeeper that I've worked with has always been very respectful of each other. They've always been very, very competitive, wanted to win, wanted to make every save, win every rep that they do within training, win every five-a-side and play every week. But ultimately, come match day, they've always been very, very supportive and looked out for the other goalkeepers within the group. And that's something that I've taken great pride in myself, in terms of, one, I've had a lot of excellent human beings working with me, and two, you know, dare I say it, being able to manage that situation to an extent, along with the management team that you know, we've had at the clubs as well.
Have to ask you about your time at Charlotte.
Yes.
So you were at Burton at the time.
Yeah.
And you switched to Charlotte. because it was a great opportunity. How That's did it right. come about? And I'd like to know, yeah, your perspective on goalkeeping currently in MLS and the coaching side of it compared to what it's like over here.
Yeah, I mean, so the opportunity came about. I was approached by the sporting director, Zoran Konecta of Charlotte, interviewed for the job. He told me about the club, a new franchise starting up in the MLS for the 2022 season. They'd had a setback through COVID, so their entrance into the MLS had been put back a year because of the COVID. Interviewed for the job. It looked a fantastic opportunity. Great city, really, really good place to live and to work. And it was a fantastic 2 years. You know, the goalkeeping side of it was very enjoyable. Again, the first thing that I had to do was find three goalkeepers along with the recruitment staff and the team that were already in place. But, you know, this is a club that was called a football club but had no players and no staff. You know, that was Zoran's job to employ the staff. So it was, and this is the fascinating part about it and the project that really, inspired me or got my juices flowing to go there was, you know, how's this going to happen? So I travelled around Europe looking at goalkeepers. Some of the staff were looking at goalkeepers within the MLS. I watched hours and hours of videos of goalkeepers, and eventually we were able to sign two goalkeepers from within the MLS. So we traded and we got those two goalkeepers. And then we'd seen a goalkeeper, Christian Kalina, who was playing in Bulgaria at the time. I went and watched him play some Europa League games, and as we got into Charlotte and just before we started officially, we were able to sign him and bring him over to Charlotte for the start of our pre-season. But that comes with its own issues. So we'd signed him before pre-season started, but you know, he couldn't get a visa for 4 weeks. So halfway through pre-season, he turns up. All of these different things, challenges that you have working in America, in the MLS, and, visas and different things that you need to go and work. So, yeah, it was very, very interesting.
Crikey, that is... So you're starting from scratch. You've got... That's such a broad spectrum as well. And you're travelling all around Europe and trying to find the right goalkeeper for you. Like you said, with all the issues of getting into America... After that's quite the challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, and again, it's a fascinating thing about the MLS and the franchise system, you know, and that was something that's been a real learning curve for me and, you know, something I'm really pleased that I've been and seen because, we start with zero players, we go through, we get a few in that we're able to get on free transfers. You have a expansion draft to bring players from other clubs. We go through a pre-season and our first home game was we played LA Galaxy at home in front of 74,000 people. And they turned up not knowing who anybody was, basically. You know, there was a... I'd met these people, these players, for 6 weeks of pre-season, some of them less than that, and 74,000 people turned up to watch. And, we were lucky in that our crowds, I think we averaged 34,000 across both seasons. So it was really good.
It's bonkers, isn't it? It's so different out there. I also feel that there is, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but... an affection for goalkeeping that's slightly different to the perspective of goalkeeping here in terms of the attitude towards them. I mean, not just the quality, but they seem to really celebrate their goalkeepers. Whereas here, yes, we do celebrate goalkeepers, but we're also quick to knock them down.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, and again, that's part of the American culture. They are fully behind their players. They support the teams and support their players in a completely different way to how we do in Europe, maybe. So, it's really good to see. And there's a good standard of goalkeeping over there at the moment.
I'm going to get onto your playing career just very shortly.
It won't take long.
Plus some of the individuals you've worked with. Got a quiz coming up too, by the way, so you can get excited for that. Plus Richard Lee's final question. So yeah, so let's do your playing career. So the bit that interested me is that you were at Spurs as a kid. So I looked at the dates, right? So am I right in thinking that you would have been around the club during the time of Gaza, of Waddle?
I was I was a schoolboy during most of that time, so I spent my school holidays, as you could at the time, going in and training with the reserves, the youth team, and spent a lot of time around those people. I spent quite a bit of time around Gary Lineker, around Paul Gascoigne, and Paul Gascoigne in particular is, you know, he's an idol of mine. And
do you have a Gaza story? Is there one in there?
I've got hundreds of Gaza. there's a few, yeah. No, I mean, the one thing I was being at Tottenham at the time, Gaza actually did a video called Gaza Soccer School at the time, which was filmed at Wembley. So it was like a training video, if you like. And so I was lucky enough, I spent 3 days at Wembley with him filming that in goal. Going through these sessions and, you know, in between every filming edit or everything that was happening, all he wanted to do was take free kicks and dribble at me one-on-one. And it was a fantastic 3 days, yeah.
Was that released on VHS?
It was, yeah. It was live on channel. Say it was live. It wasn't live. It was on Channel 4 as well.
I think I might have had that. Are you the goalkeeper in that video?
Yes, no. One of them, yeah.
No way.
So that was good fun. And I actually played after he'd done his knee. He played a comeback game in front of the Lazio staff at the training ground to prove that he was fit, and I played in that game with him as well. So that was a highlight.
Oh, mate, that's awesome. And some individuals that you've worked with over the years, I'm just going to throw some names at you, okay? Jack Butland.
Yes.
Here's someone who's had an interesting career, currently at Rangers, obviously burst onto the scene, went to Euro 2012, I think it was, wasn't it? Also was at the Olympics.
Yes, too.
Had an interesting time at Stoke. You would have been around when he had that horrendous injury and had to nurse him back to fitness.
Yeah, I mean, I was a sort of a big part of signing Jack from Birmingham at the time. And we bought Jack in as a 19-year-old at a Christmas transfer window. We loaned him back to Birmingham till the end of the season. He then came in and had a year. He went on another loan to Leeds and Barnsley. And again, this is part of what I was talking about in terms of finding a pathway, development plans, having a clear idea of what you want for your goalkeeping department and the structure, and finding some longevity within that. And so, you know, that was always part of the plan. We had Thomas Sorensen and Asmir Begovic at the time fighting out for that number one spot. And we saw Jack as somebody that was going to come in and take over from either of those at some point, whether, you know, Thomas was maybe coming towards the end of his career and Asmir was being touted around for moves to other bigger Premier League clubs, and he did. He went to Chelsea. So there was, you know, that's that pathway that we were looking for. So the idea was always to bring Jack in, to loan him, to get him game time where we could do, whether it be Premier League, whether it be cup games, and find a pathway. And he did. He, you know, after a little while, got his opportunity, grabbed it with both hands, and performed brilliantly in the Premier League for us, unfortunately, until he broke his ankle playing for England. You know, that was obviously devastating for him. It was a massive blow for the club, because he was a massive part of what we were doing that season. And you know, it was a really tough time for him in terms of overcoming that injury and how things progressed from there.
And when you have a goalkeeper of that ability who does suffer an injury like that, that's where you, again, as a goalkeeper coach, have to come into your own, right? Because you play a massive part in his recovery and keeping him motivated to come back.
Yeah, I mean, there was no need to keep him motivated at all. You know, he's one of the most highly motivated players I've come across. So motivation wasn't a problem. It was being able to give him things to do to keep him ready, to keep his mind active, to help him through that rehabilitation process and try and get through through that as safely and as effectively as we could do.
What kind of things in that regard then?
I mean, there were a lot of things that we do on a weekly basis, whether it be, you know, sitting down, talking through videos, watching other people, you know, little sort of reaction pieces in the gym without having to use his ankle or his foot or his legs, depending on what stage of the rehab we were at. And just working with, you know, sports science, strength conditioning to work on other aspects of his body that we needed to keep intact to make sure he was ready and to get through that rehabilitation process as quick as possible.
Yeah. And finally, you would have worked with David Breyer.
Yes.
At Brentford.
That's right.
I have to ask you, it's a goalkeeping podcast. I pretty much ask every single goalkeeper coach this now when we do a pod, this situation at Arsenal. Just your take with him and Aaron Ramsdale.
David's a fantastic goalkeeper and, I really enjoyed working with him. It's a difficult situation, I have to say. And I kind of alluded to that earlier with my answer about competition within the goalkeeping departments. It's a situation where I think I might not be completely right, but both keepers are roughly the same age, have probably played about the same number of games in the Premier League, are both in the same situation, trying to be number one for their country, both number twos effectively for their country. So they're both desperate to be in the same place. And as I see it, I feel like it has to come to a head at some point. And I've always felt that in some way, there's always one goalkeeper within the department or within the one or two that is slightly ahead of the other, you know, no matter how you see it. And that may be the case from their staff's point of view, that they see one ahead of the other and that's clear and that's right. But in terms of competition, I find it very difficult and it's disappointing. I think the biggest thing for everybody to look at is you probably feel that it's disappointing that there's one really, really top goalkeeper that's not playing every week in the Premier League, and he could be. And they both could be. There's space for them. And I guess that's probably where most people's disappointment lies, and especially maybe with Aaron being English and he's not playing at the moment, that you feel that there's a really, really top goalkeeper that isn't playing.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key things with all of that, isn't it? You just want to see Aaron Ramsdale playing again. So, mate, thank you for having me. Like I said, we're going to have a little quiz and then we'll finish with Richard Lee's final word.
Okay.
So I actually think this might be a bit hard, this quiz. I think I might have made it too hard, for which I apologise.
I'm not a stato.
But the quiz, Andy, is Andy Quay, how well do you know you?
Oh, wow.
Cue the music. You made your one and only professional appearance on the 26th of October 1994. Who was it against and what was the score?
Portsmouth, and we won 1-0.
Straight in.
Rumblow's correct. Cup.
There you go. Yes, it was. Very good.
How can I forget that?
Crack of a goal scored that night, by the way. Paul Simpson. Who was in the opposite net that night?
Knighty.
Alan Knight. Yes, correct. That's two from two. Maybe it's not going to be that difficult. Can you name the back five in front of you that night?
Craig Short. Martin Call. No. Shane Nicholson. Gary Charles. Glyn Hodges. No.
Three more. One was a left-footed centre-back, I think.
Wasn't Martin Cole?
No. I think his nickname was Bruce.
Oh, Mickey Forsyth. Of course. Mickey Forsyth. How can I forget me?
Then one, I think, played for Nottingham Forest, I want to say. I think.
Yates.
Do you want me to give the two remainers?
Oh, my God.
Darren Wassell.
Oh, Darren, yes.
Yeah, he was at Forest, was he?
Yes, he was, Darren Russell, of course.
And Paul Williams.
Yes. Oh, sorry, guys.
Decent, mate.
I'm sure they won't be listening, so I won't hurt their feelings.
Three out of five there, not bad. This is going to be hard. Before Charlotte FC were Charlotte FC, there were four previous outfits under the Charlotte banner. One of them still exists. Can you name them?
Charlotte Independence. And the rest of them I would probably struggle with. No. Go on.
So there was Charlotte Lightning, and actually Lightning without a G.
Right.
They won the American Soccer League in 1981. Charlotte Gold,
Okay.
And Charlotte Eagles.
I knew the Eagles, but yeah, the Eagles is the name I know, but the other two, no idea.
Okay, on what day did you commence work as Brentford's goalkeeper coach?
Christmas Eve.
Wow, correct. That's a mad one.
It was a it was a strange one.
Down well with the family.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. It was travel down to Brentford Christmas Eve morning, meet everybody, get some kit, do a training session, rush home for Christmas Day.
Gotta love football, haven't you? What is the nickname of Belper Town? Something to do with the industry in the town, I believe.
Millers. No.
Close. The Nailers.
The Nailers.
I don't know how close that is, apart from the last four letters. You took charge of one game following the departure of Gary Rowett at Stoke. Who was it against?
West Brom at home.
It was. Where did Kettering Town play their home games during the time when you were on loan with them?
Yes. Kettering.
Rockingham Road. Does that ring any bells?
Not really. I only played three games from.
Two more. What is significant about Saturday, the 2nd of November, 2013?
Asmir Begovic scored a goal.
That is incredible. That's correct.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's correct. The world record.
The world record. Longest goal.
Yeah. First minute of the game, right?
It was, yeah. Yeah, straight back and bounce over Artur Boric.
That's impressive that you remember that.
Wow. They're big moments.
And the last one. A very big moment for you. Your last, I'm going to say professional outing. So this would have been when you were at Hereford.
Okay.
Came against Hensford.
Oh.
How old were you at the time?
At the time. 21.
23.
23?
23 years, 8 months and 7 days to be exact.
Well, I didn't realise I managed to play for that long.
So it'd been a while since you made your last appearance, right? You've been out all
year.
Yeah,
I'd had a knee operation. Yeah. I've missed quite a bit.
You've done well there.
Wow.
I anticipated you not doing as well.
But Thank you very much.
You've done very well. Do you know why? Because the past couple of quizzes we've done, the subject hasn't done brilliantly. And I thought, crikey, am I making these too hard? But no, good. You know about you and your career and your life.
Brilliant.
The final question has to go to Mr. Richard Lee.
Okay.
He likes to have the final word. So, Richard, please take it away.
Yes, it is that time of the show. What everybody's been waiting for, no doubt on tenterhooks, especially with this particular guest. So it is time for that question. Andy Quay, what has goalkeeping given you?
I think goalkeeping has given me a livelihood. It's given me something to manage to meet a lot of people, fantastic people, have some excellent times, to support the family, it's given me a lot. It's been really good.
Andy Quay, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.